Jewish Women, Pittsburgh Section, Oral History 2. We are interviewing Judith Palkovitz. We are Minna Nielsen and Howard Braun. Judy, please state your full name and address.
My name is Judith Launer Palkovitz. That's L-A-U-N-E-R. I live at 100 Denison Street, apartment 443, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 15206.
Go ahead. Continue from that.
Okay, so we should start all over again, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. I was born in Liberty, New York, which is 2 miles from the Grossinger, in the middle of the Catskills. When I was 5 months old, my parents moved to Fairfield, Connecticut, and they came to Southern Connecticut to work in the war industries. My father worked for General Electric, and my mother worked in a variety of things. She worked at Remington Rand, and she worked in various things. My mother was a nurse, and we lived in government housing. Just let that go by. We lived in government housing, and which had been put up to accommodate people coming in to work for the war industries. And we had the only telephone in the complex because telephone service was very, very limited. And it was put there because my mother was a nurse, and therefore it was an emergency telephone line. I had three brothers. My brother Michael is 2.5 years younger than I am. My brother Joel was 15 months younger than Michael, and my brother Stephen is the youngest, 6 years younger than I. We grew up in Fairfield, Connecticut. What's the next thing you have in there?
Grandparents.
My grandparents, my father's father was a general practice physician in Liberty, New York. He went to visit somebody in the mid-1920s. He was in practice in New York City in the mid-1920s, and he was in an automobile accident in Liberty, New York, and broke a hip, and was put into Maimonides Hospital and stayed in Liberty while he recovered. The community implored him to leave New York City and set up a practice in Liberty, which he subsequently did, and so my father moved there when he was about 10 or 11. My mother was born in Brooklyn, New York, but they went to the Catskills because my mother had breathing problems, and it was easier in the mountains than it was in the city. My mother's father died of an accident. He was a painter, and he was painting a house in Hyde Park and fell off a ladder and subsequently got pneumonia and died when my mother was 9. My grandmother raised 2 daughters by herself and did not remarry until she was in her 20s. Grandmother
was in her 20s.
Till my mother and her sister were in their 20s. My grandmother was a waitress at various establishments in Liberty, New York, and then became a waitress at the Grossinger Hotel, where she was a waitress for 32 years, and there are fabulous stories about my grandmother. My father's parents, my grandfather was a general practice physician, and you're right, the answering machine's not picking up. No, it did pick up. A general practice physician, and my grandmother was a homemaker. My grandfather was an ardent Zionist. He was a rare book collector. He was a Jewish historian. He was the president of, at many different times, the Medical Society, the ZOA, the United Way, and everything else that had to do with Sullivan County. My grandmother, who we called Bubby, my father's mother, was the place where if you came from New York City and you wanted to make sure you were getting a strictly kosher meal, you went to Mrs. Launer's. Whenever we showed up, there was always somebody there eating in my grandmother's kitchen or in the dining room. It was kind of like an open house for the Jewish world. Some of my fondest memories are visiting my grandparents for Pesach. My grandfather's Seder usually had around 40 people, people who just happened to be in Liberty over the holidays and needed a place to come, as well as the entire family, etc. What else do you want?
Why did your grandmother's apartment, why was it used as a liquor storage?
Oh, my grandmother was a waitress at the Grossinger, and I only recently learned that her apartment on 10 Church Street in Liberty, New York, was in fact the liquor closet during Prohibition for the Grossinger. That's where the stuff came down from Canada, and they delivered it to my grandmother, and then periodically the Grossinger showed up to pick up what they needed. Mm-hmm. My grandmother led a very colorful life as a waitress. Many pictures of her with Rocky Marciano and all kinds of sports figures that appeared at the Grossinger. She was a grand old lady and a very courageous lady. She raised two daughters on her own, sent both of them through college, and moved to Connecticut in 1962 when the man I know as my grandfather, but who was in fact my step-grandfather, had Lou Gehrig's disease, amyolateral trophic sclerosis, and lost the power of speech, and they moved to Connecticut so my mother and her sister and their husbands could help take care of him and actually have my grandmother have somebody who could speak to her. When my grandfather died in, I guess they moved in 1960, when my grandfather died in the spring of 62, my grandmother moved into my parents' home, and she lived with my parents. My father died in 1971. She stayed living with my mother until she died at the age of almost 92 in 1989.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where'd you go to college?
I went to Chatham College here in Pittsburgh. I went in the fall of 59. I graduated in the spring of 63. I majored in political science. I spent a semester, spring semester my junior year in Washington, D.C. Probably a semester that changed my life. And as I say, I graduated in 1963 and went to the Maxwell School in Syracuse, New York, Syracuse University. Received a master's degree in 1965.
Mm-hmm. And I married Harry. How'd you meet him?
I met Harry on a blind date in December of 1961 and promptly left for a semester in Washington, the spring of 62, mm-hmm. and then went home for the summer, etc. We met on a blind date. My college roommate's then boyfriend, now husband, who was a good friend of Harry's, introduced us. We got engaged while I was in graduate school, and we got married on June 13th, 1965, 2 weeks after I got my master's and 2 weeks before he finished his internship.
Mm-hmm. And regarding your bat mitzvah, you made some remark about that.
Yes. I grew up in Fairfield, Connecticut, and at the time I was growing up, there were very few Jewish families, and we went to Hebrew school at Ahavat Achim in Bridgeport, Connecticut, which was an Orthodox congregation. And when it became, when I was in my last year of Hebrew school, which was also the year of my 13th birthday, the rabbi decided to try something new, and he decided he wanted to have a bat mitzvah. Now, it was very unusual to have bat mitzvahs in Orthodox congregations at that time, and as it turns out, this was not going to be what we would consider the normal bat mitzvah now. He wanted to do it as a group, and he wanted to do it in June, a week following our graduation from Hebrew school, and I refused to do it, and subsequently the other girls in my class followed my lead. My birthday is in November. This was going to have no relationship to my turning 13. My grandmother, Bubby, my father's mother, who was coming down for my graduation, didn't believe in bat mitzvah, wouldn't have known what it was all about when I was having it a week later, and we were going to have it as a group, and it wasn't going to mean very much. Mm-hmm. So I refused to participate, and the rabbi didn't like that. But the entire, I don't know when they ever got to girls' bat mitzvahs. at that congregation, but it was not while I was there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it was supposedly fully in any so-called Orthodox. High school, were there any Jewish friends there?
High school was very different. My parents built and moved into a house in out of the government housing and into a house in 1953.
53?
And, yeah. Mm-hmm. And we had, subsequently, the high school, there were a lot more Jews in town by that, and we were in a different part of town. And in fact, my high school had a fair number of Jewish kids in it, unlike my elementary school, which had three Jewish families. The Berkowitzes, the Kaplans, and the Launers, we knew we were a minority. There was never a problem. But we were definitely the minority. My high school was a wonderful place to go. The first year I had gone to Roger Ludlow High School, which was the only high school in Fairfield. Roger Ludlow is a...
What was the name? Ludlow?
Roger Ludlow, L-U-D-L-O-W-E. Roger Ludlow was a patriot during the Revolutionary War, as was Andrew Ward, for that matter, where I ended up graduating. Andrew Ward was built my sophomore... I entered as a sophomore and graduated in 1959. My father taught in my high school. He was a math teacher. I had my father for geometry. It was a very interesting experience. My high school career was very normal and very extraordinary. I became the first student from my high school to be sent as a foreign exchange student. I went in the summer of 1958 to Italy through the American Field Service Program, and I was very, very lucky to do that, and it was extremely unusual at the time. It made the front page of the Bridgeport Post, which was the paper of record in Southern Connecticut. In 1958, only the exceedingly wealthy, and then only few of those sent their kids to Europe at all. I was from decidedly middle-class parents who were both teachers and chosen by my high school, and I went. I was editor of my yearbook. I had a wonderful high school career. And spent my senior year speaking to many, many groups about my experience as an exchange student, and it was the beginning of a public speaking career, which continues to this day.
Mm-hmm. Just go through your advanced degrees. You graduated from...
I graduated from Chatham.
Then you went to...
Went to the Maxwell School at Syracuse
School.
University.
Yes.
I got what's called an MSS, a Master's in Social Science, mm-hmm. which was a relatively new degree at the time. It was somewhat of an area studies program, and it was basically now it would be called a Master's in Urban Studies. I was exceedingly fortunate to have as my major professor and the man who was my mentor, Dr. Alan K. Campbell, known to the world as Scotty, who was a superb teacher and a wonderful person, and brought me into the Metropolitan Studies program in which I flourished, in which I loved, and created the basis for what I did professionally for those few years when I did work professionally.
Mm-hmm.
And I finished at Syracuse in June of 65, got married on June 13th, and moved...
In Pittsburgh?
No, I got married in Connecticut on June 13th.
Wait a minute,
And moved to Pittsburgh following my honeymoon.
Pardon?
And I moved to Pittsburgh following my honeymoon.
To Pittsburgh following your honeymoon. Hmm. What year?
June of 1965.
June of 65.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That marriage date I missed.
June 13th.
June 13th. Mm-hmm. And I think that covers more than we had the first half hour.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of any other comment you want to make from that period. We've got a little tape left.
I'm not sure if we covered when I went to work for the Redevelopment Authority, which is where I worked for a year.
You didn't.
What?
You
okay. I worked for the Urban Redevelopment Authority here in Pittsburgh. It was the hot shop in the country at the time. I was the first woman professional they had ever hired. It was easy to be the first woman professional in the 1960s because there were so few of us doing anything. I worked here for a year in an absolutely fabulous experience, but I left at the end of a year to go to Charlottesville, Virginia, where Harry started his neurology residency, and we lived in Charlottesville for 3 years. In Charlottesville, I held two different positions. I went to work in what was then called the War on Poverty, in an office that had just been opened in Charlottesville.
Charlottesville.
Charlotte was the wife of King George III, of revolutionary fame, and Charlottesville is named for her. Mm-hmm. And Harry was doing his residency in neurology at the University of Virginia Hospital. I got a job on this just-opened War on Poverty office, and I worked there for 6 weeks, wrote six grants, had six of them funded, but subsequently left because the black community at the time believed that with a white director, and I was the assistant director, and I was the wife, as they said, of a doctor and didn't need the job. Of course, my husband was making $3,200 a year, and I left. And subsequently, a black person took my job. But it turned out to be an extraordinary break for me. I subsequently got a job at the Institute of Government at the University of Virginia. At the time, Virginia was an all-male university. It didn't go co-ed until 1969. But I worked at the Institute of Government, which had three people with a doctorate degree and three people with a master's, and I was the one with a master's. Again, I was the first woman professional to work there.
And that also in
Charlottesville, right. And was exceedingly lucky to work on what was then called the Governor's Commission on Metropolitan Areas in Virginia. Since my degree was in metropolitan studies, it was a wonderful fit, shidduch, whatever you want. Mm-hmm. And I had two wonderful years at the university, at the Institute of Government. And I left at the start of Christmas vacation in 1968, because my daughter Sharon was born on January 10th, 1969, and I have not held a job for which I received a paycheck since then. I fully intended to go back to work.
Daughter born when?
January 10th, 1969. I fully intended to go back to work professionally. It's one of the reasons why I have two children, because I wanted to stay home till they got into school. And every additional child meant an additional 2 years before I could go back. And when it became time for David to be in school full time in first grade, I made the decision not to go back to work professionally and to stay as the major caregiver of my children, mm-hmm. since my husband's practice was very busy and he wasn't around that much.
Mm-hmm. Well, you talked so beautifully fast this time that we covered that and more.
Okay. I guess before you were asking questions, and maybe that's what happened.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think of that period to there.
It was a.
You seem to have had what I would call a fairly interesting, rich, overall benign life until this point, but with the breaks that came in the particularly at the University of Virginia.
Right. No, it was my job at the Redevelopment Authority was also a break. I had dinner in Syracuse, New York, with the head of the Urban Renewal Administration in Washington, D.C., because I went to dinner with Scotty Campbell. And the man asked me what I was going to be doing, and I said I was going to be married and move to Pittsburgh, and he asked if I'd ever considered urban renewal, and I said, well, I have, which really wasn't totally honest. It was one of the many things. I hadn't really thought of what I was going to do, and he said he was going to be in Pittsburgh the next day, and he would tell Bob Pease that I was going to be sending a resume. And, in fact, I did send Bob Pease, who was the head of the Redevelopment Authority, a resume and had my interview and got my job. Mm-hmm. A fascinating place to work. The main accomplishment and during that year for me was that Lyndon Johnson had passed the Urban Beautification Act in 1965. This was known as the Lady Bird Johnson Act. And the first project funded under it was a garden in Washington in honor of Lady Bird Johnson. The second project funded was the Overlook on Mount Washington in Pittsburgh. I was given as my very first job the coordination of that application. There were no forms for that application. They wanted projects. I wrote it up as best I could with the conferring with the Department of Parks, the mayor's office, the city planning office. I flew this prototype application to the HUD office in Housing and Urban Development office in Philadelphia, where the regional office was, and it was funded very quickly, and the Overlook on Mount Washington is the result of that.
Why are they now deteriorating?
Oh, because it's just deteriorating. It has to be redone. Oh, it's part of the city. It belongs
so
to the city. Maintenance, it should be done by the city.
And,
well, I don't know what the problem is. I know that recently they're talking about renewing the Overlook. And I take all visitors who come to the city, anybody I know, up to the Overlook.
Yes.
And there are things. But the large parts of the Overlook, the big circles, et cetera, were not even part of the original project.
Oh,
that was
a
second renovation.
Oh, okay.
And now they need to work on the walkways and things.
What about that part down near the other way toward where Christopher's used to be, the fish market?
That I actually had nothing to do with, and whatever they wanted, I don't know enough about it. It needs a lot of work,
exactly.
You know.
Yes.
I mean, the Mount Washington is one of our major treasures
That's
in the
correct.
City.
That's correct.
And we should make sure that it's done properly. But it was the first urban project after Lady Bird Johnson to be funded.
Did you ever encounter Pete Flaherty during that?
Oh, yes. But Pete Flaherty was not the mayor at the time. Barr was the mayor.
Oh, Barr was
and
the
Flaherty
mayor.
Followed
him.
Barr, yeah.
Did you ever have an encounter with Flaherty?
Well, I wasn't living in the city for the next seven years.
Not. Are you, are you fortunate to miss him?
Well, I wouldn't put it that way. Pete had his moments when he was, you know, doing the right thing. Because I sometimes worked in Democratic campaigns, I encountered Pete Flaherty. But Mayor Barr was the mayor during that project. When we left Pittsburgh, we moved to Charlottesville, as I said, and we were there 3 years. We then moved to Dayton, Ohio, where Harry was in the Air Force at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. He went in as a major. All physicians had to go into the service at that time.
Mm-hmm.
It was the Vietnam War, and we were very lucky to be in Dayton, Ohio, and not to have him in Vietnam. We then did a year's fellowship at Ohio State. He did an electrophysiology, and then we moved back to Pittsburgh in the summer of 71 when he went into practice, and a month later, David was born.
Mm-hmm.
My son David is named for my brother, Joel. My brother Joel died on New Year's morning, 1970. Tragic, horrible death. He had been a paratrooper in Vietnam and had survived and had come back. He had been dropped into Khe San and every place you can imagine. He had survived that. He came back to the United States and he died on a toboggan, on a golf course, on New Year's Eve, when he encountered a 6-foot-high snowball frozen at the bottom of the golf course, left there by people who just left it there and it froze, and he went down on a toboggan and he hit it and he died.
He smashed into it.
Yeah, my son David is named for him. And David was born in August of 71, a month after Harry went into practice, and my father died of a heart attack on December 30th, 1971, the same weekend that my brother had died 2 years earlier, and they were both major losses.
Yep. You said something about an uncle who fought with the British Israel Army, I take it British Army in Israel.
How?
Well, how was he connected?
Okay, he's my grandfather's youngest sibling, my father's uncle.
Yeah, father's
uncle Harry. Uncle Harry went in 1919 in the American Brigade, fought on the side of the British during World War I, and fought in Palestine. Met a woman there who was a Sabra, married her, brought her back to the United States. In 1934, they had 3 children, and they moved back to the State of Israel. Of course, it wasn't the state then, it was just Palestine. And they lived in Rishon LeZion, Uncle Harry was a lawyer. His son Dan.
Did you know him?
Yes, I met him. I met him in Israel in 1978, the only time I ever actually was with him. On our first trip to Israel, Harry and I went to Rishon and we met Uncle Harry. His son Dan was, his youngest child, was killed in the 48 war. His son Noam, who was a good friend of mine and a lawyer in Rishon, was practiced with his father for many years while his father was alive. Was the mayor of Rishon and the commander of the Jericho district during the 48 war. And Noam is actually my father's first cousin, but he is a very dear and close friend of mine, and on almost every trip to Israel, I see Noam and his wife. He's a fascinating man who was, as I said, the mayor of Rishon, very much involved in politics. We have all kinds of political talks as well as just, he's my closest relative in Israel, in my opinion, although we have other relatives. And Harry's family has relatives.
When did Harry die?
Harry died, I would say in the early 80s. Actually, the middle 80s. And his wife, Esther, died in the early 80s. And I did not meet Esther. She was very sick. When, in fact, we met Uncle Harry.
Did you have, in regard to those discussions you've had for Israel, is there a succinct summary of the thought of his that you would express, or yours regarding those
discussions with Noam? Noam and I, whenever I'm there, it depends on what the current political situation is as to what we end up discussing. He usually knows the background gossip. He usually knows who's doing what to whom and who's getting paid for it. And he helps, he teaches me a great deal by telling me what's going on. I get to ask questions of, I'm there and usually in the capacity where I can ask government officials various and sundry things. But there are things you do not ask government officials and things you do not ask in public. But Noam and I get to discuss things pretty much. He's a lawyer and still practices. And his wife, Leah, was a nurse. She hasn't been a nurse for many, many years, but she's very active in volunteer activities, was very instrumental in helping settle Soviet Jews in the Rishon area, and she does a lot of work in that kind of, social work kinds of things. And Noam still practices law. They have three children, all of whom are now in Israel for a while. Their son, Dan, who was named for Noam's brother who died in the 48 war. They all live in Israel, and they have a bunch of kids, and they're my closest relatives in Israel.
Mm-hmm.